With Turkey's leader looking more and more like a dictator, it makes you wonder if he set up his golden retirement program like other dictators apparently do with ease. The publication of those Panama Papers documenting how political leaders find ways to channel national wealth into their own pockets and move it into accounts and assets where it's untouchable, we can see a wide-scale systematic abuse of the financial system to benefit greedy politicians. But it actually goes far beyond that. A deeper investigation into nations in the developing world finds that money taken by dictators and thieves in 149 developing countries since 1970 and locked away in offshore accounts adds up to $12.1 trillion. $12.1 trillion in assets that might have financed real investments in those nations rather than buying flashy condos on the Riviera. Jim Henry is a self-described investigative economist who pored over 40 years of IMF and World Bank data. He now works as a senior advisor at the Tax Justice Network and a senior fellow at the Columbia Center for Sustainable Investment. Henry says that 30 countries on the list account for 95% of the total money taken.
What's striking about our list of 30 countries that dominate the $12.1 trillion from the developing world that's offshore is that many of them have no rule of law, no free press, and they're ruled by autocrats. When you look at the list, you see Russia and China right at the top. There's been a huge amount of capital flight pouring out of China in the last 18 months, and our data is as of the end of 2014, there was already $1.6 trillion owned by Chinese residents that was offshore outside of China. So, you know, Russia's total, $1.3 trillion. Saudi Arabia is another big player here. That's obviously not a liberal democracy.
And when you say kleptocrats, you're talking about people who are taking money that would otherwise go to the citizens or projects within particular countries, taking it for themselves, and then funneling it offshore where nobody can take it.
Well, I'm talking about whatever resources they're able to get their hands on. Usually public assets are involved, but also private markets are in these countries are often organized in non-competitive ways. They may have loans from state banks. There's a thousand ways to help yourself to the public treasury if you have influence and power. It's really crony capitalism that we're talking about here.
How much is this $12.1 trillion flowing around the world, a distorter of the global economy? For instance, can you tell whether it operates in cycles, whether capital flight goes up and down according to the business cycle, or is it a result of individual issues within countries, political instability and the like?
There's basically three or four different drivers. Some of it is political instability and being concerned about regime change. Some of it is just pure outright tax dodging, where there's countries that have, like Mexico, has an income tax that's being evaded on a massive scale. The global total is really more like 24 to 34 trillion. And this 12.1 trillion is just the share that comes from the developing regions. The rest of it comes from the OECD countries, the rich countries in the world. But I think the world economy is just beginning to appreciate, you know, that this is about 10 to 15% of world wealth, and it's a big deal. It has a dramatic impact on wealth inequality because none of the wealth here is being taxed or, you know, it's really reportable. It's obviously helping dictators stay in power because they don't need to be responsible to their residents. So it really has a lot of negative effects on the world economy.
How much of an impact has this $12.1 trillion coming out of the developing world had? What might have been built that hasn't been? What might have been channeled to citizens hasn't been?
Most of this offshore money is being, I would say, underinvested. It's invested in very low return assets. U.S. Treasury is paying, less than 2% compared to what you might get if you had a, you know, developing countries typically offer 20 to 30 to 40% ROIs on investment there if you can take care of the issues about political risk. And so there's a real opportunity cost to the world. I mean, collectively, the developing regions are a net lender to the first world to the tune of more than $10 trillion. And that's a major hidden cost of the existing system, which really almost dwarfs all of the development aid that we provide. $140 billion a year is, you know, much less than the opportunity cost of investing all this in low return assets offshore.
So an investment in a water system in Iraq or someplace in Africa, which might return 10 or 12%, and supply water to the people of those countries, instead goes into low income treasury bills, and the people aren't taken care of, and it's just a way of money not working when it ought to.
Yeah, the social returns on investment in developing countries tend to be north of 30%, but you know, returns on education and healthcare systems and basic infrastructure, roads and highways, capital for those purposes is scarce. Meanwhile, you have kleptocrats basically satisfied with zero rates of return as long as they can maintain the stuff they've stolen. So they're not concerned with the yield. So this is a real pathology in the existing system.
And is there a network for laundering it and infrastructure here?
Well, it's really a global haven industry. What's highlighted by the Panama Papers is that, you know, a lot of the requests for secret offshore trusts and companies were coming from the largest banks in the world, including big players like HSBC and UBS and Credit Suisse. When you look at where the money actually ends up, much of it ends up back in the first world countries, the United States, the UK, and Switzerland. Every dictatorship has its variations, but, you know, lots of states in California, you see the Chinese money flowing into Vancouver, which now has a real estate boom. Ordinary Canadians can't afford to live there anymore. It's a real scandal that we don't really know who owns the real estate in places like New York and London. And the U.S. Treasury is just now beginning to require declarations of beneficial owners for real estate transactions. But there's a lot of work to be done because, you know, that is not self-enforcing. Somebody has to audit the database and make sure that it's properly reported. And it really needs to be public so that everybody can look at who owns it. But even for states like Delaware, we have no idea who owns the more than 1 million companies registered in Delaware. So it's not just an offshore problem. It's also gotten to be an onshore problem.
And you're speaking to me from Florida today?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
You're in Miami?
I'm in North Palm Beach.
In North Palm Beach, in some rich condo owned by some nameless Saudi prince somewhere, and you have no idea who built it or what?
No, it's actually a house that I owned with my girlfriend.
And you're surrounded by Eastern European dictators in gigantic palaces?
Not at this particular place. No, all my neighbors are working middle class. No, there is a gated community kind of Florida. So I've seen kind of two ways of living here, the extreme societies that are based on a healthy middle class, a lot of citizenship involvement, community spirit, and the other extreme where, you know, you have a lot of people who are just left out. I definitely think we should prefer the former.
James Henry, thanks so much.
Great to be here.
Jim Henry is a senior advisor at the Tax Justice Network and a senior fellow at the Columbia Center for Sustainable Investment.